Hello, everybody. This week's podcast is brought to you by John Cena's House of Food. That's right. His time is now to open up a nationwide chain of restaurants where you can eat the same shit that you've been having for over the past 10 years. Tired of Vince McMahon shoving John Cena down everyone's throats? Well, how about let John Cena shove some food down yours? That's right. Kids 12 and under eat free, because we all know that's the fan base that John Cena aims to please. So come on down to John Cena's House of Food, where he's serving up all your favorites. Well, there's only five things on the menu, including the five-knuckle sandwich, the AA non-alcoholic pina colada, and the STF, the spicy turkey fry. So bring your family, and most importantly, bring your wallets. Don't expect any fair prices, because we all know John Cena doesn't sell anything well. Enjoy the show.
Doing the job.
The kings of wrestling.
History beckons the Macho Man.
Yes!
Don't really watch wrestling, just get tombstoned. You niggas can rest in peace.
The greatest team in the history of wrestling.
In anybody else's hands, this is a microphone. In my hands, it's a pipe bomb.
And now, it is time for Doing the Job with your hosts, Denny Love and F2J.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
What up, Denny?
What up, M2J?
How was your weekend?
My weekend was fantastic. How about you?
I was pretty good, actually. I'm sorry, did I cut you off?
No, go ahead.
I was about to say, I got to interview Ophidian the Cobra. And that interview will be on this podcast just a little later.
1 year in this podcast business. A full year later, this is the start of a new year for Doing the Job, and we have our very first wrestler interview. I cannot be more excited.
The dawning of a new era in which lion and hyena come together in a great and glorious future.
This is the beginning. From this moment on, from right now, the genesis of now, from now, this moment right now, the genesis of McGillicuddy.
Boo.
I don't. Everybody's favorite promo. Well, I'm in a great mood. We have a jam-packed show tonight Doing the Job.
We do.
Wrestling.
We are stacked tonight.
Podcast. We're podcasters. We're like official. I think like 1 year is, I think we got our wings now.
Yeah, should we get business cards that specifically say podcasters, podcast extraordinaires?
My name is Denny Lugs. I'm a podcaster. Here's my card. Call me sometime.
First name Denny, last name Lugs.
Yeah, that's my real and full name. Please don't wear it out.
Well, anyway, we have SummerSlam in just 5 days.
Yeah, we have the Summer Scam. It's one of everybody's favorite shows of the year, and it's looking pretty good this year, I think.
It is. Hopefully they won't ruin it.
Wow. What do you think could possibly ruin this SummerSlam?
I'm not happy about Triple H butt-dadding the main event.
Here we go. I knew this was coming.
Well, you had to know this was coming.
Yeah.
Well, he's going to be the special ref again. You remember when he, like, butt-dadded CM Punk's, like...
Yeah.
White... When Punk was white hot, he had to jump in there. He had to be the special ref. And then had to beat CM Punk in a match for no apparent reason.
Yeah. So what you're saying is, for Triple H, you think that he's afraid that he's not going to be relevant. And I messed up that word before. He's not going to be relevant. And so like 2 years ago, he had to insert himself into CM Punk's basically his hottest moment. Of him, the indie guy rising to the top. So he inserted himself in that situation.
So now we find ourselves in a similar situation 2 years later. Another ROH slash indie guy who is now on the hottest of his career, getting into the main event scene of the WWE at SummerSlam against John Cena. Here's Triple H yet again.
Right. This match has sold itself perfectly. There is no reason to overbook this the way that they're doing it.
I wouldn't say it's overbooked just yet. I say let's see how it turns out because, I mean, unless you really feel like we're going to get the same exact thing. Triple H is the referee of the match. Somebody or other wins the match. Then now in this position, Randy Orton, he was, you know, Del Rio's position 2 years ago, cashes in, becomes a champion, and then now...
Right, and even that. Another guy
wrestles Triple H in the next month's pay-per-view.
Right, even that. You have the Randy Orton as, like, the wild card in this whole thing, which just adds another element to it. We didn't need a special ref on top of that.
Right, because if I say let's take it to the big, I mean, there was two really big segments on this Raw. Which what did you think of the Go Home Raw? By the way,
I thought this Raw was like the Raw of a thousand great promos. Didn't you?
Yeah, it really was. It just if you weren't sold on SummerSlam, this Raw definitely. I think this is like one of the better good Go Home Raws in a while because
this is one of the better good Raws.
One of the better good. All right. I'm getting excited.
I see that.
So it was one of the better go-home Raws because usually we have a go-home Raw that's kind of like a bunch of random matches, and we had some randoms, but the promos were there. Like you said, the mic work was there. It's old-fashioned selling us on the event, on the pay-per-view. And I want to take it right to the Miz TV segment, the John Cena and Daniel Bryan, considering that's what we're talking about. And like you said, and we'll talk about what they said, but you had two excellent promos from John Cena and Daniel Bryan.
Let me tell you how good this promo was. One of my coworkers, who doesn't watch wrestling, through no fault of mine, was watching this promo today. I looked over at his monitor, and he was watching the back and forth between Cena and Bryan.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It has an old school feeling of excitement that anyone who might even slightly be the casualist fan can watch it and feel engulfed, feel drawn into this. They did that very well last night.
Just to recap, and I'm not going to do a full recap of this because there's no way I could do it justice because you just have to watch it, find it on YouTube, watch Raw, whatever you got to do. There was a... sort of an implied mutual respect between them when this first started, when John Cena first chose Daniel Bryan. And ever since then, there's been a breakdown. Like, that respect has peeled away, and there's some kind of seething animosity betwixt them. And what it boiled down to last night was they were in each other's faces, and what Daniel Bryan basically said to John Cena is... you're not a wrestler, you're a parody of a wrestler, you're an entertainer, I am a wrestler. And basically just told Cena that he's not to be taken seriously as an opponent, but he doesn't represent wrestling. He represents something else, and the people should have a champion that's a wrestler. And Cena, I thought, had a great, you know, it wasn't business as usual. Cena had a great comeback saying, I'm here for the fans that are loyal to me, and as long as they are here, I will be here. And, you know, my t-shirts, my merchandise, it's not about that. It's about the message on the shirts. And it ended off with Daniel Bryan saying that they have the custom in Japan where a wrestler will slap another wrestler to get him fired up. And he said, I can't do that to you because you are not a wrestler. And Cena slapped him.
Yeah, he said, you do not deserve the slap. You don't deserve the Japanese fighting spirit, is what I was getting at. So I just want to draw the attention to the line of that Bryan Danielson called John Cena a parody of a wrestler, a parody. Now let's go back to the Payback pay-per-view, where in the main event it was John Cena versus Ryback in the Three Stages of Hell. Did I not, on this very show, call John Cena a parody of professional wrestling after that main event?
I'm going to guess you probably did. Otherwise, you wouldn't be saying it now.
I definitely did. And I know exactly the point that drove me to say that. When the finish of the match, it was just it's almost sort of just the way that the John Cena's selling and the way that the match was laid out and how it's just kind of like hit you with this, hit you with that, hit you with this, don't sell this, whatever, just bop, 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 back and forth. And then, you know, up there on the top of the ambulance, he flips him over his shoulders, puts him through the ambulance, and it's just not doesn't show that he went through a hard-fought battle, doesn't have any pain or anguish on his face, just, hey, throws his hands up in the air and is all smiles. And it's just kind of like, this is a joke, this is a parody. This is just, it's almost like he's not only just a parody of pro wrestler, but a parody onto himself. It's almost like, well, this is what they just expect from me, so now I'm just not even trying to look and feel organic. I'm just a parody, essentially.
You know what? I think, ironically, he's doing some of his best work right now, especially on the mic.
All right, on the mic, yeah, well, for sure. I mean,
playing,
that match...
He's playing such a great... I mean, he's playing into...
He's playing his role exactly how he should be.
Exactly.
And me and you, we say it every single week. We're not here to bash Cena. Like, we have our opinions about the overall Cena character and the work that the guy, you know, does. But I'm talking about that particular match. It just... He didn't work that out well, but we've said it time and time again that when he has the right guy in that other corner, he has the CM Punk or now the Daniel Bryan. It just – you get a different Cena.
Right.
You're going to get some of the same things that we don't really like, but you got somebody in there kind of like holding it all together, so to speak.
And it's going to be D. Bry. By the way, I made a side note of this. When the beginning of the show, Maddox – was the special guest referee, which started this whole special ref business, and he quick counted D. Bry's shoulders to the mat in the match against Wade Barrett. Vince McMahon came down to the ring and asked for an explanation, and it was leading to Brad Maddox saying, "I should be the let me make it up to you and be the ref at SummerSlam," and that's how Triple H intervened. And by the way,
well, Maddox did say he wanted to be the ref,
right? And then Triple H intervened and said, "I'm going to be the ref." Or, that sounds like me. And then he pedigreed Brad Maddox, and it looked like Brad Maddox didn't sell it quite right. Like he sold the kick, actually fell to the ground and didn't set up for the pedigree, and then like had to like get back up and like do the receive the pedigree.
Yeah, he missed up a little bit. It's okay.
But did you see Vince's suit?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to continue with the Cena and Bryan promo, but yeah, to go off on a tangent for a second, Vince last week talking about Bryan's suit.
That's why I'm bringing it up.
And you said it yourself, the things that he's worn over the years.
Right.
And now look at last night.
Yeah, it was like a purple jacket with it was weird.
It was weird. I mean, no big deal. It's funny. Vince is starting to be a parody of himself now.
The only thing that made it a big deal was that he was getting in D. Bry's face last week, and this suit was, like, ridiculous. But anyway, yeah, so back to Bryan and Cena.
Right. So there's a lot of good things that everyone was saying. So, I mean, Daniel Bryanson had the promo of his career. Just the intensity that he had, everything. It was unbelievable. The way he delivers things sometimes, just so simply, like telling The Miz to shut up or I'm going to punch you in the face. Just like, nothing fancy, just simply, you know, the way he simply put. But there was a couple things that Cena said that really stood out for me. He said, I'm sorry. I noticed that, and this is not necessarily a bad thing or a terrible thing, but Cena, obviously, he constantly gets booed. And he seems to go to the well with this a lot. He quickly tries to get the fans back in his favor by doing one of either two things. He either puts over his opponent to get cheers while he's speaking, or he talks about all his Make-A-Wish contributions. Which I hate to say something as amazing as doing that as a bad thing or a detriment to, but it's kind of like where there's cheap heat, it seems like a cheap pop in a way to get people on his side.
Yeah, although I can't think of many times that he's mentioned that in the ring. Like the announcers mention it, they show but he doesn't really get on the mic very often and say, "I grant Make-A-Wishes, cheer me."
Well, all right, maybe not as often as I like to think in my head right now, but all, you know, putting the opponent over and at least he didn't say this time, because he does it all the time, and I hate the whole, I love that you could cheer me and boo me. And he did mention it once, like, you know, whether you, you know, love to boo me, to cheer me, blah, 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 blah. But it's, like, enough already. Like, we get it that you respect the people that hate you. If that's the only way you can get them to cheer you by saying you respect them, I just feel like, I don't know, is the whole Cena thing working at this point? We know he's playing his role right for this angle.
In a situation like this, it works perfectly.
Okay. All right. And it was another thing, too, how he said that when he said that, you know, how dare you say that I'm not in this for the same reasons as you. I'm here for all of this, for all these people to be able to chant our phrases and our names and this and that, and for them to come here and be a part of the show and to chant who they want to chant for and cheer who they want to cheer for and be a part of it and this and this and that. And you know what? I thought that was very good, and what he said, and it felt like it was reinforcing what we were talking about recently, and that when people were chanting Husky Harris at Bray Wyatt, and we're tired of this, like, we get it, you're a smark, you know that he was Husky Harris. What happened to just going to the show and cheering for you want to cheer and being a part of the show and being into the show? And I felt like that was him just voicing those feelings out there on Monday night.
Yeah.
That we were having. So I thought that was very good by John Cena, because we need to hear more of that. Like, just shut up and we're here for to enjoy the show.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm in agreement.
Yes, yes. We do that from time to time.
But I mean, and then just how many good promos were there tonight?
All right, what else do we have? So that was a great segment. I mean, Orton comes out at the end. And like you said, you look at the whole situation. Triple H came out, and then Orton came out, didn't say a word, and it starts to reek of overbookedness in a way.
A little bit.
But, you know, I say let's, you know.
Although Orton got a massive pop, it almost sounded like it was sweetened, like it was a taped show and they added a pop. Like, but it was that he was so over with this crowd.
Orton was really over, and Triple H was really, like, the most over I've seen Triple H in a long time. He even, when he came out earlier with McMahon, when he pedigreed Maddox, he's had to stop and say, oh, you hear all these people chanting my name. Like, that never happens anymore.
I think part of that is he's kind of become the advocate of D-Bry in this whole situation.
I guess so. So now I beg the question to you, sir. Yes. Since he's become the advocate for D-Bry, and he's really doing his best to go against what McMahon's doing, which is kind of against what the fans want, do you think he's being built up to knock us all down by turning heel at SummerSlam?
It's entirely possible, which is what I'm afraid of.
Especially that... All right, let's look at this scenario here and tell me what you think about this. And I don't want to sit here and armchair fantasy book, but let's just look at this as a hypothetical. So Triple H, let's say, screws over – we have one of two things. Either he screws over D-Bry and Cena turns heel along with them, and now you have Triple H, Vince McMahon, and John Cena. And D-Bry is shot into the stratosphere because all of them against him, and he's like the uber good guy out of the situation. Or he just screws the both of them. Which is more likely, you know. The Cena thing, we've said it, it's not happening.
There's so many scenarios that could come out of this at this point that it's almost not even worth fantasy booking any of them, because this could be any number of alignments. This could be Vince and Orton, Triple H and Orton, Triple H and Vince, Triple H and Vince and Orton, Cena and Vince. Like,
I forgot about Orton.
Right. It could be, you know, Orton does something to cost Cena the title, and D-Bry ends up the champion, but then Orton cashes in and beats Bryan. This could all be being set up so that Orton cashes in after D-Bry wins, and then D-Bry beats Orton, and he ends up cashing in and losing his Money in the Bank title shot. And this sends D-Bry way into orbit, because now he's beaten John Cena and Randy Orton the same night. Like, it's
so many possibilities.
Right. It's like you could armchair book this into an oblivion, but
right.
At this point, it's like we just have to sit back and watch.
I think so. And this is one of those matches, and I love when they come around, where it's, you know, end of an era. I just want to sit back and watch. I don't want to think about it. CM Punk and Undertaker, I just want to sit back and I just want to watch it. And I'm totally okay, and I would be totally satisfied if we go into this main event at SummerSlam with all the intrigue in the world, like you just mentioned, all of these possibilities, and with all that intrigue to garner all of this interest from everybody, to go in, watch this match, and even if it ends clean as a whistle, no swervy swerve, no funny money, I would, and as long as the match was fire, I would be totally happy with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I don't need the M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong ending. I just, you know, I want to see an amazing match. It's good enough to have this intrigue enough as it is. We had the funny money crazy CM Punk 2 years ago with Money in the Bank and Survivor Series. And SummerSlam with the Kevin Nash and the Del Rio and the whole mess at the end of that, which was still a good match. But, you know, we don't need it all the time.
Part of what worries me is because I feel like they were planning on doing something with all that, and then it ended up going nowhere.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other story. It was Nash couldn't fight. Nash, he wasn't cleared, and then there was this whole debacle, and then, you know, you still think Triple H butt dadded the whole situation.
I really do.
Welp. But, you know, it just, I don't know. There was all that business with Triple H right down the middle. And it's just kind of like, I'm getting that feeling.
You're like, stop saying that. We've seen this whole special ref thing before.
Yeah, stop saying right down the middle. And on the most unbelievably small side note, The Miz is just totally like a non-factor in this entire company anymore.
I find the Miz TV segments have gotten really, really good. And maybe that's just because of the guests he has, but I look forward to them every time they come around.
It's because the angles going into SummerSlam are good right now. I don't think it's because of anything that The Miz is doing.
And I
love The Miz. It's just, you know, it is what it is.
But we started to touch on some of the other things that happened on Raw. One of them was there was a battle royal to determine who would be the number one contender for the United States title. Mm-hmm. And Dean Ambrose cut a really good, very, very authentic Johnny Moxley.
Yes.
Promo.
Right. And let's talk about that.
In a nutshell, just said, as far as he's concerned, none of the singles titles matter in the WWE except for the United States title. That's the real title because that's the title everybody runs from, not to. And he said he doesn't care who wins the Battle Royal because unless Andre the Giant's ghost is in the Battle Royal, he's not going to lose.
That's so a little good. Bit of flavor right there, man.
So good.
Fantastic. And you know, finally, it seems like finally someone just speaks the name of this title. Everyone that holds the title, they win it. They never say, I have this championship, I'm the U.S. champion, I'm proud, I have this title, this title is important. They just win it, and then they eventually lose it. He is bringing attention to the fact that he has the title and it means something.
That title's almost been like a holding pattern title for everybody that's had it over the last several years. It was like, you have that title and you just wonder, when's this person going to lose this title?
Yeah, who's the next
Whether they are face or heel, you see it as a, okay, this person will be the United States champion for the foreseeable future. There's no reason to get excited about anything they do until they lose it.
Plain and simple, said it a million times. The secondary singles titles, they lose a whole lot of steam and a whole lot of shine when the rosters aren't definitively split and locked down.
At least they haven't made the mistake of having him have 9 title matches every week and losing every week.
Yeah, hopefully they finally got out of that funk because we don't see Curtis Axel losing a whole bunch of matches on TV. And we don't see, Dean Ambrose is not either. So I want to talk about their placement on the card, but we'll get to that in our SummerSlam.
Yes, we will. Well, we had the Battle Royal, and
Rob Van Diddley. I
felt like this was a vehicle for Rob Van Dam to win, and I felt like he was.
I thought it was going to be Mark Henry.
I somehow thought it would. Rob Van Dam was going to be the one to win. And by the way, did you notice that Ryback wore just like a pretty plain black singlet? I don't know, it might have had like a light pattern on it of some kind, but it wasn't his typical airbrushed thing.
I thought it still was, because I mean, it's been noted that they the same guy makes their singles.
Yeah, both. But I've been secretly, well, not so much secretly, but I have had this like dumb wet dream that they would have like a match where they'd be in the ring at the same time in the same place, and they would have colorful singlets done by the same artist, and they'd be right next to each other just to see the visual of it, and we just get, you know, this like blackish, like not it wasn't the kind of art that like pops like you normally see him wear.
Do you think it was by design so that, you know, RVD stands out more?
I think
as
so.
His style?
I don't recall Ryback ever wearing something quite that boring, or at least dull. Wasn't necessarily boring.
I mean, it's very possible because if I were back there and running TV, the production aspect of it, I would have done the same exact thing.
Yeah.
It just makes sense. It's just production values right there. That's just what it is. You got to take all of the visual, all of the aesthetic things into consideration. I mean, I've noticed, and they've had more of an eye towards the aesthetics ever since the end of the Attitude Era, since the brand split. Like, right when once the brand split, they were very much aware of the colors of the tights, like, on the shows, like, the, you know.
I'd say it
between
started
SmackDown and Raw, and between the opponents.
Like, I'd say it started there, and then it got a significant bump when they went to HD.
Yeah. But definitely, like, there's so many, like, I mean, you can look up any match on Raw or SmackDown from 02, 03, 04. But, like, in particular, like, the biggest match that stands out in my mind, look at the main event of WrestleMania 20. You have Shawn Michaels, Chris Benoit, who we're not supposed to talk about, but we're talking about him, and Triple H. And you have Shawn Michaels, the Raw guy in red, Chris Benoit, the SmackDown guy in blue, and Triple H, the champion, in black and white. You know, neither color. Right. No color, rather. Devoid of color. And it was like, now when you watch, if all three guys were wearing black or three guys wearing different colors, now it's like you see the colors and you just equate the wrestler to the color and the feeling that you get and just the whole look and the aesthetic of it. And that they all had a different color and different look. Just everything played into each other visually. And that was definitely by design, without a shadow of a doubt.
I think I'm inclined to agree on that one.
Mm-hmm. Because he went to Raw, of course, only after he won the title. Because he challenged for the Raw title coming out of the Royal Rumble. So that was all, yeah. I've been noticing those things since 02. Like, I pick up on these visual things, and you're pretty keen on it as well.
Yeah, we're both observant and very smart. And pretty artistic.
Well, I don't want to blow smoke on a couple, you know, our asses or anything.
Well, I don't smoke, because, you know, I'm also very healthy. In addition to being artistic and observant.
Yeah. Hey, the guy that drinks the Mexican Coca-Cola
Mexican
with
Pepsi.
All the sugar.
Mexican Pepsi, because it's actually a different formula than Coca-Cola.
Oh, yeah. Oh, excuse me. Well, I thought I was a CM Punk, Mark.
Well, for those that aren't aware, Coca-Cola actually has more sodium, and Pepsi has more sugar as well as more caffeine. So if you've ever wondered why you gravitate towards one versus the other, that's your answer right there.
Yeah, well, you're either gravitating towards having a stroke or diabetes. Which one do you want?
I want diabetes.
I don't know. You can have a stroke one time and not suffer any major neurological deficit, but diabetes could be for life.
Oh.
Diabetes is for life no matter what. You don't just catch a quick diabetes. You can have a transient ischemic attack. A TIA, if you will, and that would only be a temporary, short-lasting stroke. But, you know, anyway, I'm going to stop going.
We need to have a new segment called Ask Dr. Lugs.
Yeah, I am an EMT a month away from becoming a paramedic, so I have a little knowledge.
Like, if you have any medical questions about something you see on wrestling, a guy getting a concussion, anything like that,
send
an email to Denny at DTJWrestling.com and say, like, Denny, you know what, you know.
I'm just putting it out there for right now. Oh, okay. Yes, you can email me, Denny at DTJWrestling.com. And now that I know how to access it, I will be answering all of your emails. I want to thank, actually, really quick side note, I want to thank everybody who's been emailing me that I haven't been getting to. My man Rick Ripper, Chris Damasceno, Octopus has been sending, and Draco. If you email me, I will be reading them on the show. I promise you. Keep it up. I'm so glad that people listen and email the show and have things to say. We want your opinions to be heard.
And also, want a special thanks to Drax for making the interview with Ophidian the Cobra possible.
Yeah, thank you, Drax. I got to spend some time with Drax over this weekend at Otakon. We had a little lunch together, a couple of us, and we got to talk some indie wrestling. And he unfortunately recently went to a CZW show. I'm really sorry to hear that, but I'm glad he had a good time anyway.
Okay, you know why? Because Osirian Portal, i.e. Ophidian and Amasis, had a tag team title match against Blackout in CZW this weekend.
Well, that's probably why he went to CZW, because he wanted to see the great tag team.
Yeah. By the way, do you want me to... I don't care if you want me to. I'm going to do it anyway. A little something that occurred to me just yesterday randomly that's probably going to blow your mind just a little bit.
All right.
Technically speaking, ROH is not an indie organization. WWE is an indie organization.
Do explain.
What constitutes the term indie is when your company is self-contained, self-owned. You do not have a parent company that owns you.
I see where you're going with this.
Yeah. WWE is an indie. It is owned and operated by WWE or WWFE or whatever their official corporate name is. They have no parent company that they answer to. ROH is owned by Sinclair Broadcasting, and i.e. yeah, not its own company.
Son of a bitch.
Isn't that scary?
Yeah. For all intents and purposes, when we speak this wrestling jargon,
right,
ROH is going to be called an indie. In terms of what you're saying makes absolute sense. But you think about it as there's a major nationwide or worldwide telecasted, you know, company.
Yeah.
No, someone that's out doing their thing independently of that.
I guess. I mean, there's a mental convention when you say indie, what you're actually picturing, as opposed to what the actual words mean. But just like if you have a high speed internet, such as like a cable modem, that's actually not a modem. A modem is a modulator demodulator, meaning that it converts analog to digital signals or vice versa. Your cable signal is digital from point to point. When you had a dial-up modem back in the day, you were then converting an analog to a digital signal. So the term cable modem is actually not correct.
Okay, listen, Mr. IT guy, I talk my medical jargon. Now you want to throw your technological stuff in there? I see how it is.
Yeah, we're bringing it in, yo.
Oh, yeah, we're bringing in the careers here. We ain't just doing a job.
We're doing several jobs. We wear many hats at doing the job.
I like a fez.
And if you have an IT or tech support question that you would like answered on this show, do email me, m2j@dtjwrestling.com, and I will try my best to help you.
Yeah. And you can find me on the Twitter, at Denny Lugs, with a Z.
You can also find me at m2j. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/... doing the job. By the way, I didn't want to be rude and correct Ophidian, but he does say backslash when he
Oh man, he's never doing the show again. we haven't even played the interview yet, and he's never doing the show again. But yeah, it's forward slash. You know what? You had to teach me that. It's just everyone gets accustomed to saying backslash.
Yeah,
it's kooky talk.
But all right, anyway, back...
So the night of good promos. What else did we have?
Well, we had I thought one of the weaker promos of the night was the Paul Heyman and CM Punk thing, because they did the whole thing where they were supposed to have a match, and CM Punk was like, this is obviously a trap, but whatever. And Paul Heyman comes out and he says, all right, so I know you all know this is a trap, but of course you know that. No, I'm Paul Heyman. I have a bigger imagination than all of you. And well, I'll just show you the trap. It's Brock Lesnar is here, and Brock Lesnar comes out, and you're just like, really? Like, they not only preface this by saying, like, you obviously know this is a trap, but I've pulled the wall over your eye, like, doubly, and then it's pretty much what everybody expected, except he showed his hand all at once. Was that not strange to you?
So
CM Punk just came to the ring, grabbed a camera, attacked Brock, cleaned house, Heyman ran away, and then Curtis Axel ran out, he beat up Curtis Axel, gave him a goat to sleep on the stage. I thought that was actually one of the weaker, and ironically, it closed out the show. This was our final segment before SummerSlam, well, before SmackDown, before SummerSlam, but...
Mm-hmm. It's what you call it? I feel like they've been giving us so much quality business leading up into this that they can kind of just – we're pretty much there. We don't need
it's
the
big –
It's
just weird that it was Punk and Heyman, and it was what closed out Raw on a night where I thought a lot of golden things happened. Like Kane, the Kane Bray Wyatt thing, which, by the way, if you follow us on Facebook, I actually posted how great it would be when the Wyatts get to the ring if Kane were behind them when the lights came up, and that's exactly what happened.
Mm. Yeah. I wasn't that impressed with that segment, to be honest with you.
I thought it was pretty cool. Like, you know, because you don't want to have them brawling. You don't want to make Kane look weak and have them beat him up. You don't want to have him beat them up and... You know, you kind of want to keep it mind games going and show how they play off each other. So I thought it was, well, it was exactly what I predicted it should be.
Yeah, it was. I just felt like, you know, that's the go home. That's it. You know, I don't know. I guess you're probably right. And maybe I'm being a little too greedy.
And they can't show us too much Wyatt yet. I mean, it's technically his first match. So
right, right.
And also, well, technically not a promo. Del Rio. Begging during the match? Like, what was the last time you saw a heel beg?
Del Rio was begging against Rob Van Dam because he tried to trick him.
Right,
with
I mean, other than Del Rio. Like,
I don't know.
Like, Del Rio has brought back the old school heel begging for mercy thing, which is absolutely awesome.
He is the Mexican Ric Flair.
Yeah. And
he just needs to start flopping. That'd be, I imagine he adopts the flop. You must adopt the flop. Starting a new campaign. Done.
Adopt the flop. But yeah, by the
adopt
way,
adopt the flop. We're making T-shirts, everybody.
In that match, did Kofi suddenly seem like he was moving in slow motion toward the end of it?
Maybe he got hurt. I don't know. I thought the match was okay.
It was okay.
There wasn't any match that really stood out as
crowd,
really great, but they were all okay.
The crowd was dead for that match, though.
Yeah. It was a decent crowd too in Sacramento.
It was all right, but it was dead.
I said decent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brock, to finish with Brock Lesnar, they showed his promo from SmackDown, and they cut it up and made a whole little promo package, and I thought that was one of the better Brock Lesnar promos. It was pretty much, he made sense of the whole situation. You know, you got your tattoos and you say you train, you know, do your little jiu-jitsu and whatever, but you know, I'm a real badass, you know, I'm gonna hurt you.
Right.
And just that whole, a little reminiscent of the John Cena situation in 2012, last year.
Yeah, I thought that was an excellent promo. And for some reason, I don't know why, it just made me feel good when Heyman came to the ring and he said, watch this video package. Like, I like that he's just like, here's a video package. Like, we know it's a video package, and even if they don't say it, it's a video package. You know what I mean? But they don't usually refer to that, like, here's it. And, but, like, he does that. He's just like, these fans aren't stupid. This is a video package. That's what we call it. Here's a video package.
So now we ended Raw with CM Punk, you know, basically putting the beat down on everybody, on whole like Heyman squad. Are we going with the age old win on TV, lose on pay per view? Like, because he kind of was, he stood tall at the end there. I mean,
well,
what do
we will
what
discuss,
do we think?
We will discuss that at the prediction segment.
I see what you did.
I see what you did there.
Another thing that I always like, a little thing, I just always want to mention, two little things about the Real American match. They faced the Usos,
I'm wondering if you caught the same thing I did, but go ahead.
All right, just the three things I wanted to say.
All right.
I love when Zeb Colter.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been doing, I guess maybe people like it because he's doing it again and again. But when he has his promos, which I always love when he comes out to the ring, he always mentions something about immigrants sneaking across the border. And the way he says it
sneaking.
And then does his little finger walk, his sneak, it's just beautiful. It's just a classic little, sometimes it's the little things that really just put the explanation point on stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Just a little relish, just a little dressing. Mm. I love it. But I did like the double plancha by the Usos and the leapfrog over Swagger into the stomp onto one of the Usos. It looked brutal. It was fantastic by Claudio. I'm sorry, Antonio Cesaro.
Yeah. But the thing that I caught during this match, which I thought was pretty clever, well, very subtle and very clever, was when JBL said, I used to have an uncle named Zeb.
Uh-huh.
Did you catch why that was significant?
No.
Because when JBL first showed up in the WWE, you know, 100 years ago, and was Justin Hawk Bradshaw, he was managed by Uncle Zebediah, a.k.a. Zeb Coulter.
Oh, with Dutch Mantel?
Yeah. So,
son of a bitch.
He was called Uncle Zebediah. So he said, I had an uncle named Zeb.
Oh, wow. So he's actually pretty much used that moniker, so to speak, a little bit before.
Well, that was why when he first came back and there was like one or two people were like, I think Jerry Lawler said, oh my God, you know who that is? And he was like, Michael Cole, this might have been a little bit before your time, which chronologically was correct because Michael Cole didn't show up till 1997. And this would have been like 95, 96 mm-hmm. that Bradshaw was first there.
Right.
So.
Well, did Zeb manage the New Blackjacks back then?
I think he actually might have, yes, if I'm not mistaken.
Makes sense.
So that was pretty awesome little comment. Although JBL keeps getting the irresistible force meeting the immovable object wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like he'll say like Gorilla Monsoon always used to say, it's the irresistible force versus the unmovable object, or like he just gets it slightly wrong and it always irritates me just a little bit.
The unresistible thing versus the immovable resistance.
Yeah.
speaking of good promos, I mean, you talk about...
Deo.
You talked about Moxley or Ambrose, but you didn't mention our boy Tyler Black. He had a good little promo in there, a Tornado Shield promo.
Yes.
He's starting to come into his own on the mic there, Seth Rollins.
And by the way, did you see him... when Big Show returned, which, by the way, everybody, Big Show returned, woo.
At the end of the Battle Royal, the Shield tried to attack RVD and Mark Henry, who was giving RVD the respects. And then I think now we have Big Show and Mark Henry versus the Shield at SummerSlam, because they did say if there's any two guys that think they're bad enough to blah, blah, blah.
Right, it hasn't been officially announced yet. But,
it's not official, but let's just say that that's happening at the pay-per-view.
But they show Tyler Black looking up the ramp, and they show a close-up of his face, and he either mouths, like, what the F, or, like, holy S, or something like that, but they cut away as soon as he's about to, like, get to the curse word, even though he's just mouthing it, like, you can't hear him. It was just really funny, though, I thought.
I don't know what the super shock is. I mean, they beat the Big Show at WrestleMania, so I don't know.
Well, Big Show, you know, I guess, sort of.
We had... What else? Orton versus Sandow, okay match,
that
whatever.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, a lot of the matches weren't really the big deal of the evening. The big deal were the promos. There was that one really strange thing it was a mixed tag match, if I'm not mistaken. It was Natty and what's his name?
Ali.
Yeah, Kurgan, the giant Gonzalez. And Natty puts AJ in the sharpshooter, AJ taps, and like nothing happened, and I don't know if the ref just missed his cue, or he obviously wasn't supposed to be distracted, because everybody was completely confused by this, and Natty goes over and like offers her wrist.
Yeah, he mucked up the finish.
Yeah, and she offers her wrist to the ref so that she can raise it, and he just kind of doesn't, and then... she just puts the sharpshooter on, AJ taps again, this time the bell rings. It was just so strange.
Huh.
That ref's probably fired.
Yeah, that guy's gone. Like, yeah, it was bad. It was kind of brutal. And I feel really bad. And I guess that brings us into the Divas situation, which, what actually went on, stupidity, whatever. So apparently there's going to be Natalya versus Brie at SummerSlam. Mm-hmm. And... Natty had a match on Raw, and she's finally going to have a pay-per-view match, but at the expense of what? RVD and Ambrose are on the pre-show,
yeah.
And they're on the main card. I guess they're probably putting them on the pre-show to generate the interest to buy the pay-per-view, if people see that for free.
I guess.
But we can talk about more of that later, but it's just, I don't know. Regardless, bottom line, I'm happy that Natalya is going to be on the pay-per-view. It's just that the Bellas are horrendous. I mean, I love them. They're just not... they've gotten better. They're better wrestlers, and I give them all the credit in the world for wrestling. They're not going to – like, where's the girls that are just going to really, to a big show, where are they going to tear the house down? It's not Mickie James and Trish Stratus. It's never going to be like that.
It's also strange that there's a Divas match and there's no – I mean, I know that there's a mixed tag, but, like, there's no Divas title match. Like,
that's fine.
It's fine, but it's just weird.
They're running with the Ziggler and AJ Angle, and we'll talk about that match in the SmackDown rundown. SummerSlam rundown there.
Yeah, yeah. But
so I guess that's the situation there. I mean, really, like, you know, none of the matches were that great, but I think, like, the move of the night was Kofi getting thrown out in the Battle Royal and almost sunset flipping Cesaro, but still holding on and not letting his feet touch the ground. I yelled out, "What a maneuver!"
Did you really?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, by the way, I forgot to mention, during the Cena-Bryan promo, I actually stood up. Like, I was so excited I couldn't sit down.
I was staring. You know when it hits you that, oh, this is one of those moments, man? You know,
yeah.
Like, it really just came over me, and I just felt, like, my hair stand up. Like, this is, like, wrestling that I want to see. Like, it took me back to a place, man.
And
I felt good.
And although I loved the Cena CM Punk stuff from two summers ago before Money in the Bank, I think this was slightly more intense.
It's hard to tell, man. It's really just it's on the level. I'll just leave it at that. It's definitely on the level.
But
I only have one other thing to say about Raw, and I want you to give me a buy or sell on this. I'll do my own personal buy or sell right now.
Okay.
Stealing somebody's gimmick. Sorry, Sean. But buy or sell, Brad Maddox is being groomed to be the new Eric Bischoff, at least character-wise.
I'm going to sell that.
Ooh, I'm going to buy that one, baby.
Well, you just came up with it, so obviously. Like,
I did not come up with it. My friend Chuck did. Got to give it up for Chuck. And we were watching it together, Raw Monday night at the bar. And he turned to me and he said these words, and I was overjoyed to hear it because I absolutely agree. I feel like he's like the new kind of like the Bish. He's going to be that smarmy guy.
Yeah, but it's hard to say because they've been kind of alluding to the fact that he's kind of a puppet for whatever Vince McMahon wants. And
now, for now.
For now, but
he can evolve as a character.
But Bish's whole thing was that he took the bull by the horns, sort of, so to speak, and he's just started doing all this crazy stuff with WCW.
Eventually. I'm saying this is the beginning.
This is
the genesis.
I don't know.
The time is now.
Like I said, I'm not sold on it, so I am going to sell it.
All right, I'll buy it for now.
But speaking of our buy or sell / over under.
Yay. It's time for another game of The Price is Right with Sean Spurr.
Oh, yeah.
Once again.
Okay.
With music this time.
Oh, yeah. Spurge, hello, gentlemen. I think it's time for a little buy or sell. D-Bry versus John Cena is the match of the night at SummerSlam.
Buy. I don't want to just instantly say it over Punk and Lesnar. Ah, crap, Punk and Lesnar.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I think this is going to be one of those matches that's good. The crowd is going to make it great.
You know what? Knee jerk was buy. I'm going to say sell, and I think that Punk and Lesnar is going to be something that we're going to talk about for
don't
a really
forget,
long time.
Don't forget, Ambrose and RVD.
on the curtain jerker.
Yeah, I mean, do you remember the Usos and the Shield had an incredible match at Money in the Bank?
Yeah, but you know what? They're on the curtain jerk. They're gonna give just enough to get people going. The hot little opener. It's not gonna be. They're not gonna start. You know, going all out.
I don't know. I could see.
Punk and Lesnar is a thing that's going all out.
I could see Dean Ambrose and RVD saying, "These guys want to put us on the pre-show. Let's give them something to pre-show about."
I'll show you what's for.
Yeah. All right.
So then we both sell that.
I think so.
All right. For different reasons, we both sell that.
Right. Ricardo Rodriguez being taken off TV again is also related to failing the wellness policy.
I'll sell that. I think he'll come back repackaged or to if he's not repackaged, he'll come back to get his vengeance against Del Rio, but they want to wait a little bit and find the right moment.
I think I'm selling that, too. I think that was more they wanted to separate him and Del Rio and really get Del Rio some massive heat.
Absolutely.
Brad Maddox is still Raw GM by Survivor Series.
I will buy that completely. I think he's going to be hanging around for a while.
Yeah, I would say so, too. The Fandango character has already seen its peak.
Wow. Man. I don't want to, but I might have to buy that. I don't know, man. I don't know what's going on. I think that night after Raw was just monstrous for him, and they said, oh, that was hot, and they just pounded it to the ground until there was nothing left of it. And I don't know what else they can do with him right now. I'm sure if I thought about it, I could come up with something, but it just seems up in the air. I'll buy it, man. I'll buy it.
I might have to agree with you on that one. I think I'm going to buy that one also, unfortunately, because I don't want to, but... Christian's ongoing request and bringing back the phrase of one more match is a hint that retirement is coming soon. I'm going to sell that provisionally because...
How soon?
See, here's the thing. I think Christian's retirement is definitely coming fairly soon. I don't think the one more match thing is... related to it. I think it's just a cosmic coincidence that happens to be a phrase that he used and is using now.
Right. I think it just kind of, he was using it in the Orton feud and it was over to the point where people like repeating it. So, and you know this business, if you say something once or twice and the fans are saying it along with you, keep doing it because they like saying it and they'll say it every time. So why not keep using it? Side note, what's the over-under? If I said the over-under 3 years, what do you say?
I would say under.
I would say under two. I mean, under
also.
Tambien.
Under also.
Yo también.
All right. Speaking of over-under, WWE title changes before January 1st, over-under 1.5.
Before January 1st, I'll say over. I think we see two title changes.
Yeah, probably.
I think we see the WWE title changing before January 1st and one of the other, you know, titles floating around there.
Okay, World Heavyweight title change before January 1st, definitely.
Absolutely.
Over under two, by the way.
I think that we are still on... Ziggler's road to getting the title back.
So over under two.
Over under two what?
Title changes.
For the world title?
Yeah, before January 1st.
I say under. I say this one. I say Ziggler gets the title back before January 1st.
At the pace they've been going, I'm going to go with over.
Okay.
All right. Number of single title wins for 3MB combined over under one.
Under.
Yeah.
I mean, you never know.
TNA's highest rated show by the time it folds over over under 1.12. For reference, the past three shows starting with last Thursday have been 0.96. 1.03 and 1.05.
Under.
I'll go with over.
Oh, fuck. You know what? Anybody listening to the show, and if you're listening to this on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, if you're listening to this on the taped version, find us on...
SoundCloud.
SoundCloud.
Yeah.
Or even YouTube, or even on our Facebook, we'll put the SoundCloud on there. Because after this show, we are going to do the afterburn.
And you're going to break up on Skype, and no one's going to be able to hear you.
And I have yet another TNA rant prepared, and leave the kids at home, cover the ears up. Continue.
All right. I'm actually going to say, if for no other reason... that I would take an over for the 1.12 because If TNA does indeed fold and there's a farewell show, that'll be their highest rated show.
You know what? Hey, that's some sound logic, man. I'll tip my hat to you.
Like, that'll be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
I mean, everyone's going to want to watch. Like, all right, let's see how this train wreck ends.
Okay. And let's see. The following names are released from WWE by this time next year. Oksana, Camacho, Kurt Hawkins, Epico, Ezekiel Jackson, Unico, JTG, Rosa Mendez, Yoshitatsu, Santino, and Sin Cara, and Zack Ryder. The over-under on that is 4.5.
And how many names were those?
Let's see. We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
I say we get 5 out of those. I say over. And I think some of those people are fired. Isn't Ezekiel gone? Ezekiel's
gone. I don't think he is, no.
Yeah, he's been gone, unless he came back. I don't know. I thought he was.
I'm pretty sure he's still technically there.
I'll say over. You got to realize, though, these people are on the house shows. They're on the superstars. They're doing all these other shows and crap. So, you know, if we don't see them on Raw and SmackDown every week, there are other places fulfilling those roles. Of just the undercard people, but then again, we have up-and-coppers coming up in NXT, and they need spots.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to go under on this one, I think.
All right, so let's keep a close eye out on that. I wanted to say under, but I'll say over.
All right, lastly, percentage of total divas that is scripted. Over-under, 94.5%.
Over. It's not 100%, but it's pretty much...
You think it's more than 94?
It's damn near close to.
I'm gonna,
the whole thing is scripted.
I'm going to say I don't think it's like – I think that definitely most of it is scripted. I don't think
like, it's not word for word. It's just every single scenario on that show is scripted.
I mean,
completely. Typically
the reality shows are – you got to keep in mind they put them in scenarios to cause drama, and then they only show the most dramatic parts of the drama that they cause. So by that token – I'd say it's majority of it is scripted, but, you know, I mean, segments where they're just, like, hanging out and doing some stupid things, like...
Yeah, whatever, but, I mean, I'm talking, like, all this, the Fandango thing with Eva and all that, and Stephanie coming out, that's all fake, that's all kayfabe. That's all kayfabe. I've been all of it.
I'm gonna go, and again, not by much, I'm gonna say it's under. I'm gonna say it might even be just 90, 92, 93%, not 95, though.
Well, you know, that's such a strange number, but I mean, we're in agreement that it's at least 90% kayfabe completely, and the rest of, you know, you can't script every single word, but it's pretty much it's the whole thing, everything that's going on.
And he signs the email forever yours. Aw.
Yeah. Do you really think that the seamstress lady, you know, didn't get that they were really waiting for the last minute to go out there, and they already knew their match wasn't happening. You know, they're creating tension, like, oh, did she don't have our stuff ready? And get
you know,
the hell out of
know,
here!
You know, I was actually going to watch the show, and then my mom got a job.
Oh my god! You know, I watched the first two episodes, and I did not watch the third one on Sunday because I had to study for a very important test.
I didn't even watch the first episode. I never started watching the show. I don't think I'm probably just not going to watch the show.
I watch it. It's a bunch of pretty ladies on TV, and you get to see Bryan Danielson every now and again do stuff. So I'm okay with it.
Well, suffice it to say, you can see some of Sean Spurge's musings on lastwordonsports.com. Pop in there, check out their wrestling, or I think it's under More Sports.
Yeah, check that out, because he's like us. He's very knowledgeable. He likes to break things down. He has a lot of good opinions, and we support everything that he does.
Absolutely. So, got one more email up in here.
All right.
I don't know why I had to say it like that. I apologize.
DMX has left the building.
let's see. This is from Mr. Draco.
Dun, dun, dun. I think we need to make that soundbite as well.
Mr. Draco.
boom, boom, boom. We're doing it. I'm making it. Done. All next right. week, Mr. Draco soundbite.
All right. I took a lot of mental notes on Raws like we do. Did I say mental notes on Raws?
Yeah.
That's funny. Anyway, mental notes on Raw, much like we do.
Yeah.
He could talk all day about this Raw, but he has a segment idea that he'd love for us guys to start doing. He'll discuss in the next part of the email. He makes his mental notes and ask for our reaction to these. Short as he can. That will be by the end of the email. Cut straight to the segment. I wanted to see the show as a fan. I believe we have discussed in prior shows to start doing this. I really like you guys to make an actual weekly segment for this with an audio clip unique to your show. The segment with the title being whatever you want. I guess we can name it whatever we want. This would be my example name: Keep Change, Remake, and Book. All right, this sounds kind of like buy or sell.
Something like that.
Let's see. Well, I know you two could think of a better name, but you catch my drift. Every week, take one wrestler and say how you would book them, if you would change their character, keep them out for some weeks, add a diva or a manager, who their rivals are, add titles, what they're going for, etc. My examples per week would be wrestlers like, bear with me as I go through roster on the main website, Barrett, Miz, R-Truth, Kofi, Sheamus, Tyson Kidd, Natty, and there's a whole list of them here.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah. Now to my mental notes and your thoughts and reactions, if they differ from what you've already discussed. Here are your first official Draco After Raw mental notes. M2J, you asked for the Shield to get more promo time, and you got it. Yes, we did. Am I wrong in saying that Ambrose's promo last night might have been one of the best quotes of the year? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And he quotes the Andre the Giant thing. Yes, that was incredible.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's really, you know, it's how you get noticed.
Yeah. Second, did John Cena just cut one of his best promos ever? Yes.
Yes, he did. Absolutely.
One without holding the mic to the crowd or saying the exact same things? Yeah, absolutely. Like Punk did with Cena, I believe Brian is doing, Brian is bringing out the best in him. Absolutely as well. Did you make the note that a Total Diva reference was used to spark most of this promo? No, I did not.
I did not notice that.
Nikki and Cena visited Daniel and Bree in Washington, and they asked where his TV was. He said he doesn't watch TV. That was used. They've mentioned in the past that D. Bry doesn't have a TV or watch TV.
Right. So yeah. It's not necessarily just from there. Yeah.
Right. I think it's the best rivalry since the pipe bomb Money in the Bank match. I think so too. I think this is definitely some of Cena's best. Although it wasn't really a rivalry, I think Cena... I'm still a big fan of the Cena-Lesnar confrontation from last year.
True. That was wildly entertaining because that was something different. I talked about it last week with MMA elements.
Right. Third, for weeks the Dirt Sheets have said the Big Show is coming back to partner with Henry versus The Shield for the tag gold. Well, they were right. Just a couple of weeks off. Why? How many partners has Big Show had? Yeah... I mean, I feel like the Big Show, I don't know what, it's like they never quite knew what to do with him, and they just kind of always had him do things that didn't really make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, but, is he supposed to be the champion all the time and dominate? Like, I don't know, they've had moments where he was. I don't feel like he's been misused sometimes, but... But he's had a great career. He's done different things.
By virtue of the fact that he's flip-flopped from heel to face so many times, that kind of thing tells me that they never really quite knew what to do with him.
Right.
Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, so I guess teaming up with people was the best they could do. Lastly, Christian beat Del Rio and got the title match. RVD beats Del Rio and gets to beat a Battle Royal and gets to wrestle for the U.S. Belt pre-show. I'm confused. Well,
yeah, I was wondering about that too, but didn't make a whole lot of sense.
That's one of the reasons why I hate non-title matches with champions, especially because they lose non-title matches. That's the whole point.
Because there should be some type of ranking system.
Actually, that's not last. Did Triple H just say, did Triple H just butt dad himself into the main event? Yes, he
right,
did.
We talked about this.
I have to quote The Miz. Really? Really? Really?
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, he butt dad in the main event.
Right.
Again.
All right. So,
yeah. Got anything else in regards to the wide world of wrestling at the moment?
No, that's it. I think we need to move on to, we're going to do our SummerSlam quick little preview. But before that, I'll let you take it.
All right. Well, I got to have a little chat with Mr. Ophidian the Cobra probably best known from his work in Chikara Pro Wrestling. Ophidian is, well, he was at some point one half of the tag team Osirian Portal with his partner Amasis. He turned on Amasis a little while ago, and they had a little bit of a falling out. However, Amasis did recover him from the evil spirits that possessed him, and they have once again reunited, much to the happiness and delight of many of the fans. And I, again, thanks to Drax, had the opportunity to speak to Mr. Ophidian, and you can listen to that interview right now. With me at this time on Doing the Job, Ophidian the Cobra, Mr. Strike First, Strike Fast, Strike Hard himself. Ophidian, welcome to Doing the Job.
Yes, 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 and thank you for having me.
Yeah, yeah, thanks for being here. I really appreciate it. So, wanted to get started. I understand you're a big horror movie buff.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. I am a lover of Grindhouse, a lover of exploitation.
All right. I was so psyched when I heard about that. Are you a Nightmare on Elm Street fan?
The Nightmare on Elm Street series happens to be my favorite franchise in horror.
I am very happy to hear that. What's your favorite Nightmare on Elm Street movie?
Oh, 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 oh. It's a toss-up between numbers 3 and 4. Both have their moments between the Roach Motel killing. Yes, yes, yes. And then the Death Boy who gets to make out with the nurse, and then she wraps her tongue around him and he gets sucked, you know, he's in the bed and he's gonna get sucked into hell.
Yeah,
and then welcome to primetime, bitch. You know, shoved into a TV and so good. Both of those movies are classics in my mind. The best Freddy moments come from those two films.
What about the first one? Just the very first one, the classic Nightmare on Elm Street.
The first one to me is on par with Wes Craven's New Nightmare. There's something about those two films there that kind of changed the game up, if you will.
Yeah.
The first Nightmare on Elm Street, it definitely without that holds a special place, but Freddy is a villain in that film. You know, although he has his comical moments with the long stretched out arms and he's scratching stuff and he's dragging people on ceilings, and it's funny, but in a really, really evil way. Whereas, you know, later, he's a comedian,
right?
And but then that first film just really kind of takes funny to a different level, a different kind of, you know.
Yeah, no, three and four were definitely more lighthearted, but the first one was just dark. I agree with you on that one.
I love that. Yes, yes, yes.
Do you buy chance? Go ahead.
That's why part 7, you know, Wes Craven's New Nightmare was such a good film as well, going back to Freddy's roots.
Well, then I can't help but wonder, what do you think of the remake from 2010?
I like to imagine that it didn't happen. we didn't have to go through that, that I didn't have to go through that.
All right, so we're going to pretend that didn't happen, because I agree with you on that one. So, anyway, let's get into a little bit of wrestling here. So, right before we started, just wanted to throw out, you had a CZW Tag Team Championship match last night.
Yes.
And
live on iPay-Per-View.
And it was against Blackout, I believe?
Absolutely. Last night was the first time I had teamed with Amasis since May. Oh, I'm sorry, no, April of 2011. It's been over 2 years since Amasis and I were a team due to injuries and, you know, me kind of hating his guts for a while.
Yeah, was he mad about your rap song about how you killed him?
He was a little bit mad about it. You know, I would say him shoving me in a sarcophagus kind of backs that up. He definitely had a lot of anger when he showed back up into the wrestling world. A lot of pent-up frustration.
So how did you two reconnect and become friends again?
Well, at Never Compromise, which was the final iPay-Per-View from Chikara, Amasis stripped me of the evil that I was possessed by. He took my soul in front of the world and then shoved my body in our sarcophagus to be reborn.
I'm very glad. As you said, the whole wrestling industry is very glad to see you two together again.
Yes, 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 yes. And last night felt wonderful. It was great to be back side by side with Amasis and beat the ever living hell out of Black G's and Ruckus.
What how did you get into the wrestling? I mean, I know you went to the Wrestle Factory and such, but how did that all come about? Were you a lifelong fan before?
Well, you see, a younger Ophidian had access to the ECW arena.
Oh, wow.
Going there month in and month out and seeing gladiators and warriors and combatants just battle viscerally so close to you, to the point where you could reach out and touch, and they touch back. You know, you didn't just see the action happening. You got to feel the action happening. The ECW arena is a different kind of experience, one that you don't get when you go to a WWF at the time, you know, when I was younger.
Right.
Or, you know, a WCW or TNA. It's just that building pulls something out of everybody that's inside of it, the wrestlers, the fans. They come together and create a visceral emotion that you just can't replicate in any other kind of venue. And going there every single month and experiencing for years, experiencing pro wrestling live in front of me, it changes you. Yes, yes, yes.
So going back all the way to 521 BC, nothing was ever like the ECW experience?
Nothing. You know, there were some days where you'd watch slaves kind of go back and forth and beat each other up, but it wasn't to the it wasn't as acrobatic, it was entertaining as some of the bouts that took place in the arena.
And I understand, speaking of the Wrestle Factory, you train potential newcomers.
Yes, yes, yes. I help facilitate training alongside Mike Quackenbush and other trainers at the school.
Yeah,
I'm at the Wrestle Factory. Yes. It is a wonderful experience if you're interested in becoming a pro wrestler and are based out of the Philadelphia, New Jersey, New York area. It doesn't matter. There's a lot of people that come from far to train with us. Not just in the United States, but all over the world that fly in to come train at the Wrestle Factory under us.
Yeah, I'm sorry there's no more Chikara, though. That must have been a blow.
Yes. Yes, yes, it was.
Well, I guess one day maybe the universe will correct itself on that one. So speaking of training, do you have any sort of special dietary regimen? I mean, I don't know, do snakes have to eat certain things when they're training?
I have no specific dietary regimen. I do work out religiously to the dismay of some people involved in my life, like the significant others. Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, oh boy.
You know, all work and no play sometimes. I do believe in this, that there is always somebody willing to train harder, to attempt to be better at what they do than you. Always. There's always someone behind you looking to move ahead of you. Yes, yes, yes. And you must constantly be training, constantly be bettering yourself in order to avoid falling behind, because the next generation will always find a way to work out a little bit harder, to fly a little bit higher, to run a little bit faster. Yes, yes, yes. And the second you stop training, the day you decide that you no longer need to learn, is the day you're probably done your profession. Yes. And I'm always training. Yes, yes. 4 days a week at wrestling school, at the Wrestle Factory. Yes. And then constantly at the gym, monitoring, right, the diet. Yes, yes. No drinking for me. No smoking. No, 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 no. I mean, man, that wants to be better than the rest.
And I think we should tell the listeners that even if you're not training to be a pro athlete, not drinking and not smoking, good habits to be in.
Yes, very good habits. Now, I do not anybody can do what they like in their life. Yes, yes, yes. It is theirs to experience. They may enjoy it how they will, but if you're attempting to better yourself, right, to move ahead, and especially in athletic industry, that is definitely a must.
I do have to say, I find it surprising that significant others have a problem with you working out so much, because definitely had a few significant others that probably should have worked out more.
It's not the problem with working out. They quite enjoy the end result of that, and of course the experience of seeing me perform live. But you know, it does take away from personal life. Yes. Yeah. Constantly being in a gym and at the Wrestle Factory. Yeah.
Well, we do have to say it about on the topic of significant others that, you know, they always want you to have a career and be goal oriented, but just enough that it makes them happy.
Yes. Yeah. Mine happens to be a beautiful lady by the name of Haley Jane, a burlesque performer, a musician, yes, a costumer. Somebody very experienced in many, many fields. She understands, she comprehends.
So she's a performing artist as well.
Yes.
Yeah. And she did backup vocals for you on your Death to Amasis track.
Yes, she did.
She
was the angelic voice on that track.
Which, by the way, ophidianthecobra.bandcamp.com, if you want to hear the album we are discussing at the moment.
Yes, and there was a new Osirian Portal mixtape released actually about a week ago.
Same.
That was released by a musician by the name of David Versus Everything. You can go to davidversuseverything.bandcamp.com to check out the brand new return of the Osirian Portal mixtape, or davidversuseverything.com. It is awesome. It is, again, just a mixtape, beats inspired by the Osirian Portal, and it has our brand new theme song on that track, on that album.
And also, while we're plugging websites, ophidianthecobra.com, which pretty much is the portal to everything Ophidian.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, thank you. Mm. Yeah, so, you know, I could say Facebook, Twitter, you have a Tumblr, which is actually very entertaining. Most Tumblrs are just emo pictures, but yours is pretty good.
I'm not a sad person. I know I have no need for emo pictures. I try to be happy, at least on Tumblr. Tumblr is a sad place sometimes.
Tumblr can be a minefield of sadness.
Very angry, too. A lot of keyboard warriors.
So, what are some of your short-term goals at the very moment, maybe the next year or so, as a pro wrestler?
Well, now that Amasis and I are back, yes, we're looking to take back the tag team world. Our current goal at the moment, CZW tag team titles. Yes. That we've been attempting to get in the CZW for years, and we were back in 2010. If you've ever seen the most illegal move in the history of professional wrestling, that viral video that blew up for Amasis and myself in February of 2011, that came from CZW. We had to part ways due to some creative differences, but now we're back, and we want the gold there. Yes. There's also the tag league that Noah holds that Amasis and I are 100% setting as the top goal for us. Noah holds a wonderful tag league. If you're not unfamiliar with Noah, Noah is a promotion based out of Japan that Amasis and I are looking to go back to. We've been to Japan quite a few times, and Noah's one that we haven't been able to perform with yet.
How is wrestling in Japan versus wrestling in the United States?
Wrestling is wrestling almost anywhere you go. What makes it different are the people watching, are the fans. Yes. As I said earlier about the ECW arena, that building just evokes an emotion that no other venue in the United States can evoke from you. But Japan, they're a different kind of fan, right? They're a different kind of audience. Amasis and I made our debut at Kurnikin Hall, which is similar in mindset, right, as the ECW arena. It's a building that a lot of famous wrestlers have gone to. You know, in America, the ECW arena has held Jericho's and Benoit's and Mysterio's and a lot of greats men that have turned into greats later. At Kurnikin Hall, every major promotion in Japan has come through. Most every major wrestler has been in that building. And to have wrestled there as your debut match was insane. It was for Amasis and myself. And their fan base, they don't just cheer and boo, right? The Japanese audience just doesn't yay and boo you. No, 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 no. They clap in appreciation. They sit back and dissect what you do and enjoy every little movement, every little step you take. They take in, yes, 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 and they enjoy it all. And they show their appreciation in a much different way. It is definitely a different experience. And the competition in Japan is very, 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 very high. Yes, yes, yes. The level of competition, that is.
And you did had like a tiny like cup of coffee at ROH not too long ago.
Yes. Amasis and myself first wrestled in ROH in 2008. Our first match there was actually against Shane Hagedorn and Mitch Franklin, who later became Grizzly Redwood. And then after that match, we got a match against Generico and Steen for the non-title match. At the time, they were the tag team champions. Yes, yes, yes. And that was an experience, a very young Amasis and Ophidian battling the ROH tag team champions.
How did you...
I did make a return, like you just mentioned recently.
Right.
For ROH TV, yes.
How was it, the difference between then and now, for you personally?
It was different stepping into that building without Amasis, for one. And the feel of the company shifted majorly. It was, you know, ROH is filming for TV now. Or when Amasis and I wrestled Steen Errico, it was... It was just for the DVD audience. Yes, yes, yes. And it is a completely different experience. Everything from the fans that attended the shows to the way it's filmed to the feeling, you know, what's happening around you. Everything is so much bigger and brighter now than it used to be. And it was just a good thing. Yes, yes, to see companies growing and expanding.
Do you have interest or ambition to rejoin them one day?
I, of course, would love to wrestle for every promotion that exists out there, but ROH is not the current goal at the moment. But do not be surprised if Amasis and myself end up there.
That's something. I'd be excited to see that. And I guess when you say every company, that would include potentially maybe one day WWE?
Never say never, my friend. Yes, yes, yes.
But that is something you'd want, not necessarily, you know, there are some that would rather not, but...
Well, as I mentioned earlier, right, the ECW arena, the independents are what made me a wrestling fan. That's what turned me into a professional wrestler.
Absolutely. It's such a wonderful experience being in an indie crowd that's just electric. Mark...
The WWE, although that, of course, has made all of us fans of wrestling, it was not the WWE that made me fall in love with wrestling. It was the independents. It was your ROHs, your CZWs, your XPWs, your Chikaras, all of these promotions that have existed on the independents, you know, and obviously way more than that. That made me fall in love with. That's what made me want to become a professional wrestler. So at the end of the day, that is where I love to be. But of course, you know, the mecca of professional wrestling is the WWE. You don't get any bigger than that. And the chance to influence a new generation of wrestlers is not something I would turn down.
I'm guessing from being from all the way back in 521 BC, you must have had some influences in the business going all the way back there. And so who are some of the wrestlers that made you want to be a wrestler?
Well, you know, back in ancient Egypt, we didn't have too much professional wrestling. It wasn't until we were sent through time, right, sent to this time period.
Right.
We got to actually see professional wrestling when showing up, when landing in front of the arena and seeing RVD and seeing your Sabus just tear it up. Tables and chairs and flying, doing tope con hilos into the crowd. Arabian moonsaults. There's so much saniness happening. Oh, God, it was so good. RVD is one of the biggest influences on my career, without a doubt. And I'm so happy to see him back on a new run in WWE, as a little side note there. So glad to see he's back. And almost looking in top form. Doesn't look like that man's ever missed a day in the ring. Your RVDs, and there's also so many more people that have influenced my career beyond Chris Hero, who is now Cassius Ohno in WWE's NXT, had a big influence on my career as well. Somebody that I definitely had looked up to, as well as Claudio Castagnoli, who is Antonio Cesaro on WWE TV as well.
Good choices. So, what are some of your favorite matches of all time? Like, maybe rattle off three top of your head.
So, one of my favorite WWE matches is Triple H versus Shawn Michaels versus Chris Benoit in a triple threat match. What a wonderful match that was.
I was in the audience for that match.
Oh, were you now?
Yep.
I've seen many moments. I was there the time Benoit won the Rumble and when Goldberg showed up on Raw for the first time. But I wish I was at a WrestleMania that I've never attended.
Goldberg, what, he fought Roddy Mac at Madison Square Garden?
No, his first appearance on Raw. Oh, okay. First showed up, they're like, hey, I'm Goldberg and I'm in the WWE now.
Were you a Goldberg fan?
No. not that I disliked Goldberg, but I was a fan of the Luchadors. The first hour of Nitro every single week heavily featured, you know, your Rey Mysterios and Juventud Guerreros and your Psicosises and Conans and Blitzkriegs and Super Gallows and you know, Malenko and Jericho. There's so many good wrestlers. Not that Goldberg isn't a wrestler, but that first hour of Nitro is what I enjoyed, and I was always kind of switched back to WWF after that first hour was over.
Plus, we know if Goldberg ever crossed paths with Ophidian, the streak would have ended way sooner.
Absolutely. Slap on a clutch. Nobody's getting out of the Cobra clutch. No. I learned a thing or two watching Sergeant Slaughter.
So what was your favorite match that you were in?
Oh, right. I never finished. I kind of digressed there. Yes, favorite matches.
Yeah.
So I did the triple threat match.
Right.
There's also another match between Chris Hero and Mike Quackenbush that took place in Chikara. It was a two-year feud, a combination of a feud between those two. That was tremendous. And those men were going counter for counter, move for move. They knew each other so well because Chris Hero was the trainer of the Wrestle Factory. Mike Quackenbush was a trainer at the Wrestle Factory. They knew each other better than anybody else. And Mike Quackenbush had to invent a new move, something that nobody had ever seen in order to defeat Chris Hero. And it was such a wonderful story to be told. And it was such a beautiful match.
That sounds like
those two had.
That sounds like a very epic battle.
It was great. It was one that I was glad to have been able to say I seen live. And as far as the third, I mean, there are so many matches. You can go back to WCW when you're Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero classic battles. And I don't remember the exact pay-per-view it was on, but the one where Rey Mysterio was wearing the question mark suit. It was purple, and it had question marks all looked like the Phantom. And it was Mask versus Title against Eddie Guerrero. And it was their matches. I mean, any one of their matches are classics, but that one specifically. It was flawless in every single way.
And matches that you have participated in, do you have a favorite?
Like if you were to show... hard to say one specifically because, you know, there are different times in my career when I was a singles wrestler and a tag team wrestler. I'm very proud of a match that I've put on with one of my trainers. I've had many over the years, but my main trainer, Mike Quackenbush, a one-on-one match that we had during the 12 large summit, the round robin tournament held to crown the first ever Chikara Grand Champion. I had every single match in that tournament was great and just felt like epic battles. But the one I had specifically with Mike Quackenbush is without a doubt one of my proudest moments in wrestling. And teaming with Omasis, we had a great feud with the Colony. Yes. In our title defense, after the long feud with the Colony, where Chikara, under their system of rules, every single tag team title match, or the Campeones de Parejas, which is what Chikara calls their tag titles, are defended under 2 out of 3 falls rules. But that night specifically, it was one fall to a finish. The Colony had such a giant winning streak. You have to acquire 3 points, that is 3 wins in a row, in order to qualify for a tag team title match. Well, the Colony had 7. Due to an injury from Omasis, we were given 90 days to allow him to heal his injury. But at that point, they had such a huge streak of wins that they were allowed to pick a stipulation on the match. And they decided one fall to a finish. And man, that was a battle if there ever was one.
Sounds like sudden death.
Absolutely was.
Which is ironic because most matches are one fall to a finish. But suddenly it has a lot more implication.
Yes.
So... do you have a preference, tag team wrestling or singles competition? Is there one that you like more? Do you like them both equally? Would you like to do one for a while and then change it up?
Well, tag team wrestling is a lost art in this day and age. The WWE dictates the pace, the flow of professional wrestling throughout the industry. And tag team wrestling is in a state of flux in their show. Now that is starting to change. Yes, yes, yes. There's a lot more teams appearing on their shows, which is helping everybody, right? They're rejuvenating tag team wrestling, and I'm a big fan of that art form. There's a different kind of story that is told when there are multiple men competing in the ring, as opposed to a one-on-one. Now, I do enjoy that, and ultimately, I would love to achieve single success, but I prefer doing battle and tag team action.
5 years from now, where do you see yourself?
Hopefully, Amasis and myself will be dominating the tag team competition throughout the entire world. Yes, yes, yes. But to be honest with you, I don't know where I see myself in 5 years. There's so many different directions that Amasis and I can take. As you mentioned earlier, I started training or facilitating training at the Wrestle Factory, yes. With Amasis and myself teaming together, we've got many opportunities, not just in America, but overseas as well, that we are discussing currently. There's so many different directions we can take, whether it be full-time tours throughout Japan and being there full-time, you know, or throughout Europe, or even ending up on TNA or WWE TV, with WWE owning or creating the new facility that they did to create the next generation of superstars. Yes, we could end up in it anywhere.
So we discussed some of your in-ring influences. What about your out-of-ring influences? Anything that you bring in?
You just opened up Pandora's box, buddy.
Good. Yes. So I guess Greek mythology might be one of them.
I believe heavily in pulling from outside sources and not just being influenced from professional wrestling, but from your life, you know, not just wrestling, not just what happens within the wrestling industry, but movies and comics, TV, you know, literature, music. Bring in influence from everywhere, you know, all parts of your life. And I definitely do that with everything. Every movement I make, every piece of my wardrobe is influenced by something that almost does not exist within the wrestling world. Yes, yes, yes. I'm a huge fan, as we mentioned earlier, of horror. And a lot of the blogs I write, a lot of the things that get written down for Chikara by me are things that are heavily influenced by Hellraiser, by Pinhead from Hellraiser, and the things that he says. Yes, yes. Even Alex from A Clockwork Orange, who I'm a big fan of. A book that I've read many times as well.
Hellraiser, actually, one of my other favorites.
I quite enjoy the Hellraiser franchise. They've destroyed it and butchered it over the years.
If you've seen any of the fifth, sixth, seventh, or eighth movies, that doesn't even they shouldn't even be called Hellraiser movies. Mm.
The last one that they put out, the it doesn't even matter, because that last movie was atrocious.
Yeah,
they filmed it just to maintain the rights. They just put out garbage so that they could maintain the rights to the franchise.
Right.
Yes, yes, yes. Pulling influence from those things. A lot of my gear was heavily inspired by Mortal Kombat characters. I'm a huge Mortal Kombat fan.
I was going to ask you about that. I too was a huge Mortal Kombat fan back in the day. Did you play in the arcades?
I absolutely did play in the arcades. I also owned a Genesis and a Super Nintendo and had them on those consoles as well. So not only get to play in the arcades, I got to enjoy it.
So when I say ABACABB, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes, yes, yes. On my back, actually, currently consists of four tattoos that are inspired from Mortal Kombat, and soon will be more as I find the time out of the ring to get it done. I have the Lin Kuei, the Shinryu, the Black Dragon, and the Red Dragon tattooed on my back. Their logos of their clans on my back.
Wow. That's pretty hardcore.
Yeah, I'm that big of a Mortal Kombat fan. Yes.
Did you used to go to like one of the video game stores and buy the strategy guide that told you how to do all the moves?
I did own the Mortal Kombat 2 book that had all the fatalities and their moves in it.
It had that.
After a while, you don't need it because I've memorized every single one.
Yeah, luckily.
Hold block up, you know, B for the Scorpion fatality. I did religiously.
I had the poster with all the moves printed on it, and I put it like up on the wall, so whenever we played it, anybody could reference it at any time.
You're a lot nicer than I am.
Well, I did. I had that one friend when I first started playing the game. He didn't want to tell me any of the moves, so he would always just win. And when I started learning the moves, he was like, "How are you learning these moves?" Like I became like interrogated, like I betrayed him somehow.
Did he not see the poster on the wall? Was he a blind man that was beating you in video games?
This was pre-poster days.
Okay.
But, you know, he was that kid. He was like, how do you know these moves? I was like, I'm learning because I keep losing.
Not just Mortal Kombat. No. There's also influences from Kung Fu. If you've watched any of my current Chikaras or the last run I've had in Chikara, I started switching to a more military-esque attire, a kung fu attire as well.
Right.
Five Deadly Venoms is highly influenced by. Number two practiced snake style, and he was known as the snake spirit. Yes, 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 which is what they started referring to me as in Chikara, the snake spirit. That is where my snake style was developed from in the movie. One hand is the cobra's mouth and the other the cobra's tail. Yes, yes, yes. And that is the way he fights. But I decided that I was going to change the game up a little bit. My mask, my logo as well, are two dueling snakes. So both of my hands are the cobra's mouth. Both strike quickly. They strike fast and they strike hard. Yes, and both are venomous.
And you're also a Fight Club fan.
Yes, yes, yes.
Also,
it is only after resurrection. It's only after disaster we may be resurrected. Yes,
that was an excellent, excellent movie. Actually, there's a list. You have a top five postings of your favorite movies on your website.
Yes.
Then you had Fight Club on there. Mortal Kombat. What did you think of the Mortal Kombat movie?
I thought it was actually a very good video game to movie adaptation. It was one of the better adaptations that exist. I know there are things that could have happened that didn't. They wanted to keep it PG so it hits all audiences because, let's be honest, we all played that as youngsters. Yes, yes. We probably shouldn't have been playing such hardcore and gory games, but we did. And they wanted to make it accessible by all audiences, but for a PG-13 film, they did very well with the Mortal Kombat franchise. But Annihilation was atrocious.
Annihilation was, yeah.
I am a huge fan of the Mortal Kombat TV show, Conquest. I've actually watched that entire TV show start to finish at least 7 times.
You know, a lot of people don't even know it exists, but yeah, that show was excellent. That's where Christina Loken, a.k.a. the hot female Terminator from Terminator 3, came from.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, go ahead.
The Scorpion in that movie is also the same Scorpion from the movie. The Scorpion from that show is the same Scorpion as the one in the movie.
It was also nice to have Scorpion actually do something as opposed to the movies, which... My only complaint about the movies was mostly that we had a lot of characters that didn't really get any airtime. Like other than fighting, we didn't get any backstory for Scorpion or Sub-Zero. And let's face it, everybody loves Scorpion and Sub-Zero.
No, and why were Scorpion and Sub-Zero hanging out together? Why were they just buddies? Like, oh, you know what? We're just going to come out of these chambers together and fight the Mortal Kombat guys, the Earth Defenders of the Earth Realm.
Right.
Just not the way it works.
Yeah. Oh, they're under my spell. I'm Shang Tsung. I can do whatever I want.
Mm. Did you watch Defenders of the Realm?
Was that the cartoon or was that?
That was the cartoon. Yes.
I didn't get to see a lot of it, but I saw some episodes of it. Did you see the YouTube reboot of the Mortal Kombat story?
Yes. The original 7-minute trailer, the rebirth, the movie pitch was wonderful, and then to see that they came out with Legacy, you know,
that's the one, yeah.
Influenced off of that rebirth trailer. The Legacy is great. The trailer for the second season, yes, it's scintillating. It's exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting to hear another Mortal Kombat enthusiast.
Yes.
All the glory days of Mortal Kombat.
If you enjoyed Mortal Kombat, the TV show, there's a show called the WMAC Masters that existed in the very early 90s, which has some of those characters that would end up, you know, being in the Mortal Kombat franchise on that TV show.
Right. That was an interesting show.
Yes. I mean, not the greatest show of all time, but it had some great martial arts action. Being a fan of martial arts myself, I quite enjoyed that. And that definitely influenced me later to follow the path of martial arts, as well as, you know, taking many of martial arts. Goju-Ryu, Taekwondo, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and Muay Thai are all things that I've trained in.
And incorporate that into your style?
Yes.
Very, very good. Very good. Any upcoming events you want to plug?
Yes. August 24th and August 25th, Wrestling is Fun and Wrestling is Cool will be holding iPay-per-views. Wrestling is Fun being based out of Easton, Pennsylvania. Wrestling is Cool out of Deptford, New Jersey. If you're local to the area, come check it out. But if you can't, watch it live on iPay-per-view. It's only $10 Saturday night and Sunday afternoon. Yes. On Sunday afternoon, Amasis and myself will be teaming together against two of the finest warriors from the UK. Yes. And on the 24th, Wrestling is Fun, Amasis defends his Wrestling is Fun championship against Oleg the Usurper, the Barbarian. Yes.
And if you could just take a moment, I don't think a lot of the audience necessarily knows what the Wrestling Is series is. So if a little short explanation of the whole Wrestling Is universe.
Wrestling is wrestling by the wrestlers, I guess, in a way, you know, for the wrestlers, by the wrestlers. It started off as a YouTube channel. Yes. Wrestling Is on YouTube. Check it out if you can. And you'll see many, many wrestler-submitted videos, and not just relating to wrestling, but movie reviews and just Derek, which is I'm a huge fan of, as a magician who's also a professional wrestler. That's his life on the road, you know, doing magic tricks at the places that he goes, you know, or Darren Corbin doing his movie reviews on there. Many, many wrestlers submit things, and wrestling is fun, wrestling is cool, wrestling is heart, wrestling is awesome, wrestling is art, wrestling is respect, wrestling is intense. And I'm forgetting one off the top of my head. Kaiju as well. Yes. Kaiju Big Battle.
I actually
went to part of a network together.
I actually went to my first Kaiju Big Battle a few weeks ago right here in New York City.
Oh, I know what show you're referring to. Yes. What a wonderful show that was.
It was excellent. I saw Awful Waffle and the Gambling Monster.
I was there at that show, yes. It was a wonderful time. I'm a big Kung Fu Chicken Noodle Soup fan.
He was one of my favorites that evening. That was definitely a winner for me. Oh, yeah. I did want to ask you.
He is my favorite.
In regards to video games, were you a Street Fighter fan?
No.
It's funny because
neither
was I. I know very little about Street Fighter even. Like, I know the names, but I always felt like I was Camp Mortal Kombat, so I couldn't be Camp Street Fighter.
No. You knew as a young child that you were either Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter. You could only play for one of the teams. It's like we're in gangs. You couldn't be in both. You had to be in one or the other.
Right.
And I definitely chose my side very early. Mortal Kombat all the way. I'm not a huge fan of 2D fighters, and I was a little bit disappointed that Mortal Kombat went back to the 2D fighter route with Mortal Kombat 9, with the reboot. I'm okay with that. I'm accepting of that. You know, I will take the franchise as it is, and if that's the direction they choose to go in, I will continue to play and support. But I do prefer 3D fighters overall. I'm a big player of Dead or Alive, and used to be huge into Tekken. I kind of stepped away from Tekken and moved into Dead or Alive.
And outside the realm of fighting games, what other games have been your favorites over the years?
I'm a lover of RPGs. Final Fantasy VIII and Legend of Dragoon are two of my favorite RPGs. They hold different places, you know, in my life. I enjoy the gameplay of Final Fantasy VIII almost way more than any other RPG. The junction system in that game is a favorite of mine. But Legend of Dragoon, I love dragons. I'm very drawn to them. And Legend of Dragoon, you know, you turn into dragons. It's a special ability in that game. And the story in that game is great. The music is great. The video sequences are wonderful, especially for that time period on PlayStation 1. Definitely two favorites of mine, as well as the Mass Effect franchise.
Do you have a favorite console or a favorite era of games?
Yes, the PlayStation console. That era of just because there were no better string of RPGs released than on that console, especially when Squaresoft was releasing, you know, the Final Fantasy franchise, Vagrant Story, Xenogears, again, Legend of Dragoon, Legend of Mana. There's just so many good RPGs that existed in that time period. On this current generation, you know, the Xbox has released very little in the way of RPGs. We have Blue Dragon and Lost Odyssey, which are, to me, like the two best RPGs released, like true RPGs. And I know there are a lot of mixed genres now, something like a Mass Effect, which has, you know, action and RPG mixed together. But I enjoy true RPGs, and Lost Odyssey is the only real true RPG that's actually enjoyable, and you can play through start to finish, along with Blue Dragon. But on the PlayStation, so many of those games existed.
And how much of your week is dedicated to playing video games at this point in your life?
Very little, unfortunately, very little. I'm currently playing, as I travel on the road, I have Knights of the Old Republic on an iPad that I get to play. I'm doing 13-hour trips, you know, to Chicago and, or, you know, 5-hour trips to Pittsburgh.
So you're
not a big Star Wars fan, but I do enjoy that game.
I was going to ask, are you a Star Wars fan or sci-fi even in general?
I enjoy sci-fi. I'm actually currently watching, because I missed it when it was on, the Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, how are you liking it?
I'm almost towards the end of the first season, and I wish I was watching this show when it was on. I wish I watched it when it was on the air, and I could talk about it with all the fans of Battlestar while it was happening, as opposed to now, because all the fans have seen it multiple times at this point. They're like, oh, this, and this happens, and they ruin it for you. Like, I have to watch it in silence, alone, like I'm hiding it from the world.
Any other shows like Doctor Who, Star Trek?
I did read a lot of Star Trek literature as a child. I'm not a fan of the first Star Wars film or the actual franchise itself. I do respect how they've influenced, you know, the sci-fi genre, and do know, you know, there are wonderful moments to be had in that franchise. But overall, I'm not a big fan of the Star Wars stuff. Dune, I do enjoy from the 80s. Yes, yes, yes. But I'm more of a different kind of sci-fi. Not the spacey sci-fi as that was. More of I'm a big fan of 80s movies. Kurt Russell and John Carpenter are a great team.
So were you a fan of Jason X then? Which was, you know, horror and space sci-fi all rolled into one.
Oh, Jason X and Leprechaun in Space. Both of those films were awesome. The giant leprechaun at the end of the movie, and then Jason X turning into Metal Man. The kill where he shoves the girl's face in that, like, cryogenic goop or whatever it was in the sink, and she starts to melt apart. Wonderful.
I'm guessing you're probably an Alien fan then.
I love the Alien franchise. Ridley Scott is one of my favorite directors. Yes, yes, yes. Prometheus I also quite enjoyed as well. I know a lot of Aliens fans did not enjoy Prometheus, but I did.
You have very good taste, if I do say so myself.
Yes, yes, why, thank you, thank you, thank you. But like I was saying right before we got cut off, Kurt Russell, John Carpenter, you know, Big Trouble, Little China, Escape from New York, The Thing. He put out such a wonderful string of movies in the 80s, yes.
Some classic horror right there.
Absolutely.
Are you a Friday the 13th fan as well?
I'm not as big of a fan of the, like, I'm going to stalk you through the woods kind of serial killers. When it comes to horror, Maniac from 1980 was a definite favorite of mine. The H.G. Lewis stuff from the early 60s, you know, like Bay of Blood and Wizard of Gore and the Gore Gore Girls. Stuff from, you know, from Italy in the 80s, you know, the Fulci movies like a Zombie. Or even, I'm not a big fan of Cannibal Holocaust, but I do enjoy it for what it is and how it's influenced, you know, our you know, generation of horror after that. As well as Cannibal Ferox and Cut and Run and things of that nature.
That movie, Cannibal Holocaust, for our listeners that might not have seen it, is one of the more interesting and more brutal horror movies I've ever seen. Did you see the director's cut where they show the mutilation of animals? That was actually mutilation of animals?
I actually owned that on DVD.
There you go. Yeah, that's not for the weak of heart to watch. Even if you're a horror movie fan, it might be a little over the top for you, but I would check it out.
No, I write for a website called themandibleclaw.com where I do movie reviews there. That list that's on my website, I haven't updated the rest of the list from that I've written for the site already. My plan is to bring all those lists over to my website. But I did one on, you know, five of the most disturbing movies that you could watch. Cannibal Holocaust was on that list, but it was not number one.
What was number one?
A Serbian film. Yes, a Serbian film was number one. Mm-hmm. That is a movie that, although, yes, it is a movie, right? Unlike Cannibal Holocaust, which does have a sense of realism to it, but you just, you know, like, it's a little kooky, you know? It's a little over the top you know, the tribes of South America. But a Serbian film was pushing you to believe that this was real, that what you were watching, you know, is truly disturbing, that this could really happen. There's a sense of realism to that film that makes it more disturbing than almost any other film that I've seen. And that includes, you know, Martyrs.
Martyrs also very good.
Also, yes, very good. As well, or any of the H.G. Lewis stuff, like the, you know, Gore Gore Girls and stuff like that. You know, which are very over the top and extra.
I will have to check out the Serbian film that you speak of.
don't be mad now if you watch that film and walk away wondering what you're doing with your life and why you spent 2 hours watching that film.
Now, are you also a fan of the So Bad It's Good horror movies?
Oh, yes. Leprechaun in the Hood.
There you go. Have you seen, like, The Silent Night, Deadly Night 2?
Actually, I have not watched that yet, although it has been recommended to me many times.
That is an excellent, excellent flick. Bloody Murder, Rest Stop. They're such train wrecks. Like, you can't even tell what the director's trying to relay, but they're just gold at the same time, somehow.
I actually did a list on five It's So Bad, It's Good movies as well. It's another one of those top five from At the Mandible Claw.
What are some of your favorites?
Well, as I mentioned already, you've got Leprechaun in the Hood, mm-hmm. which is actually my number one because it doesn't get any better than a rapping leprechaun. You know, it also happens to feature Ice-T in the film. Weasels Rip My Flesh is another classic of mine where it doesn't have weasels in it, you know, radioactive weasels that grow to be huge, but you've got zombies and sharks and crazy, you know, mad scientists and spaceships and all kinds of wackiness that happens. Only something that could only happen in the 60s. And a lot of people argue with me on this, but Zombie, I thought, was It's So Bad It's Good kind of film. Zombie, I don't think, is a bad film overall, but it is very... it's not the best. And the average viewer, the average person watching it, you know, a casual viewer, it would be pretty bad. It's really only enjoyed by, you know, hardcore zombie fans. But this, especially the scene when a zombie's pushing the girl's head into this wooden spike on the wall. And it's just that, that slow push, the zoom into the eyes as the spike is pushing. That's very cheesy. Very over the top, and I absolutely loved every second of it.
Well, while you're watching it, you're wondering, like, well, I guess this can't happen. It's going too slow. And then it just happens.
And then it just happens, yes. Thanksgiving. Oh, God.
Oh, yes. The best – unfortunately, the best scene of that movie, though, is the very first scene where – the pilgrim running through the woods and the turkey just whips out the axe and says, "Nice tits, bitch."
Actually, I quite enjoyed when he pulled out the turkey flavored condom.
Yes, great.
Or the gravy flavored condom. Yes. How do you not know you're having sex with a turkey?
Yeah, that's definitely a top so bad it's good. Although now Hollywood's trying to bank on that and they've kind of ruined the genre. They've saturated it way too much.
Yes, with that man that's in R.I.P.D., the pretty boy.
Mm-hmm.
He was also in Blade Trinity. He ruins every franchise he's in, Green Lantern as well. All of his movies are very terrible, and I think they're purposely terrible. They just have to be as terrible as they are, but they're not actually any good.
Oh, well. Hopefully this will be a self-correcting system one day, and we'll have our genre, our fabled genre of happiness back.
Nothing will ever be Troll 2. We can never – we try to capture that moment on film over and over again, but we never will.
So you mentioned burlesque earlier in this conversation because your lovely significant other partakes in such things.
Yes.
Have you guys ever checked out Lucha Vavoom?
Lucha Vavoom is something we're aware of, yes, yes, yes. And we've actually been on shows together that have incorporated burlesque and wrestling.
Are you a burlesque fan yourself?
Yes.
Do you have some favorite performers?
Well, the lovely Haley Jane, yes.
Obviously.
Yes. She's the best performer.
Are you? Do you know Dita Von Teese, Marlo Marquez?
I'm absolutely familiar with them, and actually, thanks to Haley Jane, I'm very familiar with those ladies.
Oh, okay, she's worked with them, I'm guessing, or
Haley Jane. I don't know if she's worked specifically with them, but she's awake now.
Oh,
yes, over there, staring at me, wondering why we're talking about her.
Ah, are we in trouble?
No.
Did I just send a snake to the doghouse?
It'd be more a snake den.
Yeah, we have quite a following of burlesque here in NYC. We have, Media Noche, and Marlo Marquez is probably like the most well-known one.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know you were from New York.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yes, he did say Media Noche.
I've heard Media Noche. Media Noche is my favorite performer. I've never worked with her first. I did a photo shoot with her, but I've never done a show with her. She's fantastic.
Well, I don't know if you picked up on any of that, but Media Noche, yes, is her favorite performer.
Okay. Awesome.
Well, there you go.
But I will keep an eye out for Miss Haley Jane, as I will for you. You said August 24th and 25th, wrestling is?
Yep, wrestling is. Both live on iPay-Per-View. You can check those shows out at smvod.com if you can't make it to the shows in Deptford, New Jersey or Easton, PA. And beyond that, we'll also be back at CZW, again, live on iPay-Per-View, September 14th.
Okay. And do you have a website you want to plug for Haley?
Yes, yes, yes. You can check out Haley Jane, HaleyJane.com, and I Am Haley Jane on Facebook, / I Am Haley Jane, as well as Twitter and Instagram and Tumblr at The Pixie Pinup.
And one shining question for you. Before we say goodbye, your one dream match, any wrestler, any era, versus Ophidian.
Oh man. I'm going to give you two answers here, right? Because I actually have thought about my dream match against a non wrestling character, right, and my dream match against an actual professional wrestler.
Ah,
yes, yes, yes. So dream match of mine, my favorite luchador actually growing up, I was very influenced by the likes of Rey Mysterio, but Ultimo Dragon
Good choice.
I'm being the fan of dragons that I am, I have dragons tattooed all over my arms. Ultimo Dragon just oohed and awed me as a kid. The handstand that does in the turnbuckle, I do because of him. Yes, some of his movements. I do the Asai DDT I did for a while, but I no longer do it this moment. Due to a leg injury, I've kind of changed my offense up a bit and went back to my martial arts roots. But Ultimo Dragon's without a doubt somebody who I would absolutely love to wrestle. And I don't think the day will ever come where I can. But Ultimo Dragon ran the Toriumon school in Mexico. And Jorge Skaida Rivera was the head trainer at that school. And I was lucky enough to train under that man. So the head trainer of Ultimo Dragon School being Skaida, I actually got a chance to train under for a long time, and I learned a lot of my lucha. So I'm hoping that someday when I run into Ultimo Dragon, if I ever do, that helps me out.
Okay. And you said you had a non-wrestling?
Snake Plissken. I want Snake Plissken in a match.
And Snake Plissken is?
The Kurt Russell from Escape from New York.
Which is a good series. They did Escape from L.A. years later, right?
In the 90s, yes. And it was a completely different movie. But it was very campy. Very, very campy. Bruce Campbell actually makes a cameo in that movie as well. That's why I'm a big fan of it, too. Anything Bruce Campbell, you know, graces his face. You know, graces with his face, I'm a fan of.
Right. Well, Mr. Ophidian, I want to thank you for sitting down with me today to do this interview.
I'm glad we could do it. Yes.
I'm extremely glad we do it. Hopefully we could do it again sometime.
Anytime you'd like to have me back.
Anytime? Oh, same time next week then. Ophidian, great to have on the podcast. We'd like to do it again. Hopefully it's likely. I mean, you did say if the powers that be allow us one day, we will do it.
Yeah, he sounded like a really chill guy. But I don't know about that Final Fantasy VIII, man. I can't get behind him on that one. We're gonna have to do it again because we need to talk about that.
No, not a fan, huh?
Yeah, we're gonna have to have it out. I mean, he's talking about my favorite video game series of all time. That's Final Fantasy, but VIII, brother, of all of them, that's the one you mentioned. We're gonna have to get some bones to pick.
That's,
but it's all right.
That's beef.
I love you, brother. Yeah. Thank you so much for doing the job with us. That's amazing. You are an incredible guy, and I will forever be a fan and support you.
As will I. I realized after the interview, I did forget to ask him when he was talking about Mortal Kombat and what a big fan he was. I wanted to find out what his thoughts were on Glacier back in the day in WCW.
Oh, man.
And unfortunately, it just slipped my mind. You know, I was kind of going back and forth between conversation and interview mode, looking at my notes. And hopefully there'll be a second interview and I can ask that question then.
All right. Well, yeah. Sounds like a great idea, and I hope so.
But on to our last portion of tonight's show, which is our SummerSlam predictions.
Super jam-packed show, and we have 9 matches that are confirmed and rumored, and I'm going to throw them at you rapid fire. I want to hear some predictions and notes from Mr. M2J. You ready?
Let's go.
Kickoff show, Dean Ambrose versus Rob Van Dam.
Ambrose.
U.S. title, Ambrose. Henry and Show versus Rollins and Reigns.
Rollins and Reigns.
Tag titles. All right. Natalya versus Brie Bella.
Brie Bella.
Cody Rhodes versus Damian Sandow. Cody. I guess the briefcase not on the line.
Cody Rhodes.
All right. We have Dolph Ziggler and Caitlyn versus Big E and AJ Lee in a mixed tag match.
Ziggler and Caitlyn.
We have Kane versus Bray Wyatt. A Ring of Fire. Yeah, okay.
Ring of Fire, not to be confused with an Inferno match.
Because you do not need to set the person on fire. It is more to keep the Wyatt family out.
Right.
Alberto Del Rio versus Christian in one more match.
This is a tough one.
For the U.S., wow. For the world title.
This is a tough one. This could go either way. What do you think?
I say Alberto. I think Christian is, it's not the time. Alberto is going to hold it down to the heel and hold it down until Ziggy's gets back on track.
The thing is, the first time Christian won the world championship, he won it from Alberto Del Rio.
Yeah.
So, or beat Alberto Del Rio. I think the championship was vacated at the time.
I say Del Rio.
All right. Continue.
CM Punk versus Brock Lesnar.
Brock Lesnar.
One of two main events. Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
All right, John Cena versus Daniel Bryan.
I see Cena winning this match.
Wow.
Now, I see this being the start of a program between them in which D-Bry will eventually beat Cena. And don't get me wrong, I want D-Bry to win this match, but I feel like from a storytelling standpoint, you almost got to have Cena win.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I pretty much agree with all your picks. Basically, did you say Cody Rhodes over Damian Sandow?
I did.
I agree with all your picks. Now let's look at the two main events here. I'm really torn with both these main events. I think what you're saying has a lot of merit. I think they could pull the surprise.
Punk is already having a pretty lousy year.
Well, I'm talking about the title match.
Well, you said two main events, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, go ahead.
This is one of the main events, I'm guessing you're referring
to. Yeah, you're
right. So, Punk's already having a pretty lousy year, so another loss thrown on the pile, it would just fit into, like, he had a lousy 2013, as opposed to he one loss kind of thing. And I feel like Lesnar, he needs to, he's been coming back and just kind of, like, winning here, losing here, winning. He's kind of, like, I can't remember if he's got, like, a tied record or he's, like, won one more match than he's lost, but...
He's wrestled four matches, and he's 2-2. He lost to Cena and lost to Triple H once and beat Triple H twice.
Right. So I feel like it'd be nice to have him win a few matches.
Who I want to win, I want CM Punk to overcome and win just... Me, Markin, I think is gonna win. I think it's. I think you're right. I think it's Lesnar. I think it's. I think they did the old win on TV, lose a pay per view.
Would you say that there's a good chance that there's gonna be a correlation between if CM Punk wins, D-Bry will lose, or if CM Punk loses, D-Bry might win?
I think so. I think it might be Punk loses and D-Bry wins with an Orton cash-in orchestrated by Vince McMahon? Because, I mean, think about it. It's pretty obvious because McMahon is saying that he doesn't want either one of them to be the champion. And guess who's not either one of them? Randy Orton.
That's right.
What a briefcase. And I think something funny the money is going to go on. Like I said, I'd be totally happy with all the intrigue, and then nothing funny happens. It's clean. Something's going down. You know what? The main event... I don't even really want to try to say. I'm very interested to see what happens. They did a very good job of making me not... They've made it unpredictable. Because like you said, there's a million and one possibilities. It's a choose-your-own-adventure at this point, and I just want to see what happens. We could kind of say, Lesnar needs it, or Lesnar might come up with this one, and Lesnar wins the battle, Punk wins the war. We can kind of predict that. But that main event, it's unpredictable, and that's what I like.
Yeah.
About it.
All right. Is that
it? So let's just strap on in and enjoy
the ride
this Sunday night.
All right. We got a couple of plugs to throw out here because I feel like this show's been so jam-packed it might behoove us to do so.
Go ahead.
All right. OphidianTheCobra.com. You can find all kinds of stuff he's done there. He also has an album out on Bandcamp. It's OphidianTheCobra.bandcamp.com. His burlesque dancing girlfriend, Haley Jane, HaleyJane.com. You can find us at DTJWrestling.com. That's an access to pretty much everything we do.
Oh, yeah.
Facebook.com/doingthejob. I could probably plug more things, but I feel like that's enough.
You can leave us voicemails at 646-820-3332 and let your voice be heard on the show.
Yeah, start doing that more, people, because that's really awesome when you do that.
It is really awesome. You get to hear yourself on a podcast. I mean, we have to listen to our stupid selves every week. What about you?
What about me what?
What about you as in you, the listener?
Oh, you meant
not you, stupid.
Yeah. Anyway, for doing the job, I'm M2J.
And I'm M2J.
And we'll see you next Tuesday.
Any luck.